began on what it was like, what happened, and what it is like now. If the speaker wishes to stop early before 6:20 p.m., he may do so, and we will open the meeting for questions. As a reminder, please be aware that if you ask a question, your voice may be audible on the Light a Candle podcast. Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting podcast. Visit our website at oalaig.org, where you will find links to prior podcasts from this meeting available in multiple formats. The opinions expressed on the Light a Candle podcast are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Jeff M.
Yay. Hi, I'm Jeff. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm a 100-pounder, and I practice what is called sober eating, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, in a few minutes. There's pictures circulating. There's me in high school, me in college, me as an adult, and I went fatter, fattest, because the disease is progressive in my case. And I don't mean to sound, you know, harsh about myself or about anybody who carries weight, but certainly people were harsh to me about my size, and so it's sort of become meaningless. Those words have become meaningless to me because they were used against me, and now they don't apply to me, and I don't care. It's kind of weird. There's sort of the charge has been taken off words like fat and, you know, pig and things like that, because I heard them so many times. What harm can they do me now? Anyway, what it was like. I don't want to go into the whole, you know, woe is me food log thing because, you know, I grew up as a fat kid in the 60s and 70s, and there was no such thing as political correctness, and everybody had an opinion. Everyone expressed their opinion. Oh, I was in New York, and I'm Jewish, so add those to the, you know, in as well. So, you know, nobody kept their mouth shut, particularly my relatives, but strangers, teachers. There was no place. The bottom line is, when I was a kid, I didn't understand what was going on, and there was no place for me to find safe ground because everyone had an opinion of what was wrong with me. But nobody really knew. At least nobody really knew that ever talked to me about it. And look, there's something very soul-sucking about doing something against your will and against your best interests, but doing it anyway, again and again and again. And that would describe, you know, my life. I didn't want to eat. I went on diets every day. Some lasted 20 minutes. Some lasted 6 months. I lost weight on the ones that lasted 6 months or even 6 weeks. But I didn't, you know, it was a Band-Aid to this disease. But I didn't know I had a disease. I thought I was just wired poorly. My mother had this disease. My father was what might be called a heavy eater, as opposed to someone who's a compulsive eater. I was fat before I knew what food was. So I had no words to put to the disease, the feelings, the issues that I was dealing with. I just didn't. I went to college during the sexual revolution, and I was revolting. I mean, that was, you know, that's sort of the bottom line of my you know, child, my young adulthood. And then I decided after college, I'm going to lick this by myself, and I lost 100 pounds in 6 months. On the Jeff diet, which was just eating, you know, kind of sanely for a minute, for 6 months, you know. And then I moved out here. I moved from New York to here and actually kept the weight off for 5 years, white knuckling. And when I talk of white knuckles, they were white and then they were red because they were so white. I mean, I just, you know, just held on by the skin of my teeth for about 5 years, and then I gained the weight back in quite quickly, and then I found OA. And had I stayed in OA, for those of you listening at home, there was a young woman who had a 37-year anniversary here this evening, which is mind-boggling in many ways, but also understandable and beautiful in so many others. And had I stayed, I would have probably been about 37 years into the program. Instead, by the way, numbers, I'm 14 and a half years abstinent. I've lost 140 pounds. So that's probably should have led with that. Anyway, I won't bore you with the what it's like, though, any more than I already have. I didn't know why I was eating. I couldn't stop eating. It was the most demoralizing thing I could possibly think of. And there's just one other thing I want to add to that, which is that everybody had an opinion of what I should do. Everybody. And I mean everybody. Okay? And they were not afraid to express it. However, unless they are someone who shares my disease, they have no freaking idea what they're talking about. They could tell me anything, it meant nothing. They could be 100% right, it meant nothing. Because they don't have my disease. You know, there's a thing called battlefield French bunker, bunker mates. My dad fought in World War II, and I was with him once 45 or 50 years after he last saw somebody. He ran into them, and you would have thought they saw each other yesterday. They were friends for life because they shared this experience. And no one outside of that bunker could have understood the experience they had. They were the only two people left alive, I think, in the world that shared that experience. And it was very meaningful to them. I share my experience with all of you. And you share yours with me. And that's the only way I can recover from this disease. Because my mother, who had my best interest in heart, my dad, my uncle, who was a shitheel, they were, but they still had my best interest in heart, couldn't possibly tell me how to arrest my disease. They couldn't possibly do it. Jean Nedich couldn't do it. By the way, she founded some weight organization. I won't mention the exact name. And all these other people, Jenny, whatever her name is, they can't do it. They don't know. They don't have what I have. You do. And if I listen to you, maybe I can climb out of the hole I dug for myself against my will and against my better judgment. So that's where I found myself 14 and a half years ago. I was going to get a gastric bypass because it seemed like the easier, softer way. And I went to the doctor and he said, you can eat this much food. And I said, I will go crazy if I eat that much food. He said, yeah, you probably should talk to my shrink. She'll tell me you're fine, is what he said. And I said, maybe I should find out if I'm fine because I don't think I'm fine. Because this ain't fine. 340 pounds ain't fine. Right? The inability to even think about doing something about it ain't fine. I was not fine. So I found a therapist who I actually knew from the first time I came into OA. I called him up and I had to look him up. I hadn't seen him in 20 years. And I said, hey, can you, I want to come see you professionally. So I can't see you professionally. You're my friend. I said, what kind of friend hasn't seen each other for 20 years? I mean, come on, I'll give you money. Just come. He said, no, but let's go talk at Wednesday at 2 o'clock, and I've got a couple hours. I'm like, wait a minute, you're going to do for free what I'm willing to give you money for? He goes, well, I guess, yeah. So I went, and it was just up the street here at one of these coffee joints, and we talked about it, and he said, look, you're going to need the program. Either you're going to, and these are his words, mutilate your body and come to program, or you can come to program. He says, and if you come to program and it doesn't work, he'll be there in 3 months or 6 months. He says, that's his business. He's not going anywhere. I said, okay, fine. So I went to a meeting. I went to Serenity Sunday in Beverly Hills, and I put my hand on the door handle, and I said something that I never thought about saying before because, previous to this, I was not really very much interested in spirituality. I was what I call a deli Jew. I can tell you where to get a great corned beef sandwich. What Jews think about God is not in my purview. I cannot tell you that. Even today, I'm not 100% sure. And it's okay. But I walked into the meeting and I put my hand on the door handle and I said, God, I don't know if you exist. I don't know if you do exist, why you would listen to me, because I certainly haven't been very attentive to you. I haven't been a good child or son or whatever you'd call it. I haven't been a good, I haven't really called on you. You have had no part in my life. But if you're out there, If you can hear me, if you give a damn, can you please help me to not compulsively eat today? And I walked in the meeting and, had the emotional experience that one has either the first time or the coming back after a long time, and I had that experience. Then I called the guy up and I said, okay, you got me into this, you're getting me through it, you're going to be my sponsor. I didn't give him much of a choice, but he kind of saw it coming anyway, and he was my sponsor for the first 3 years that I did this program. And he got me through the steps and he saved my life. And I wanted to pay him, but he couldn't have brought me into the program. I was about to say a word that I'm told is politically incorrect, but he couldn't have brought me into the program had he taken my money, ethically speaking, I suppose. So anyway, whatever it was, I got here and I said, okay, I got to figure this out. And and this sounds really cliche, but I took my AA 12 and 12, the little blue book, thin blue book, and I went down to the beach. For those of you listening at home, we're in Santa Monica. Well, we're next to Santa Monica, California, which is a beach town. I live in Santa Monica. I'm just 10 blocks. I've been very graced with living just 10 blocks from the ocean. I walked down to the ocean, sat down on a berm, and was reading my 12 and 12, and it was getting a little colder and a little darker. And I asked the earth to stop turning because I didn't want it to get colder or darker, and it didn't. Stopped turning, and the waves were coming closer, and I weighed 340 pounds, or maybe 339 at this point, and I was, I didn't want to get up and move my, large butt over to another berm, so I said, waves, stop, you're done, don't get closer. But the waves kept getting closer, and so I said, and I'm reading step one, I'm powerless, I'm step two, come to believe. Well, I've come to believe that the ocean's going to get me wet if I don't move. And I'm getting colder, and it's getting darker, and I'm going to have to leave soon. And I don't want any of those things to happen. So what am I in control of? Where do I have control? Where is my power in this equation? And the answer is, I don't have any. I don't have any power in almost any equation that I enter into. I am powerless. I am completely powerless. I am powerless over food. I cannot handle certain foods. Okay, I cannot do it. And there are some I might be able to that I gave up that I might now be able to do it. But you know what? I'm not willing to try, because what if I'm wrong? I don't want to go back to the place of not feeling confident to be able to walk into a convenience store or a grocery store and not walk out binging. That is not a good feeling. That is not a good feeling. And I felt that for years. And I got to be honest with you, I have felt it in two or three times in the recent weeks, because I was in it. But I'll get to that in a moment. Anyway, step one, I'm powerless. I can't stop eating, so I'm powerless. There wasn't a lot of mystery to that step to me. Came to believe. I didn't really believe, but I saw that. I have sponsors who have trouble sometimes feeling the spiritual vibe of the program, and right now in West Los Angeles it is 60 degrees and sunny. I would like it to be 80 degrees and sunny. Anybody? Okay, well, they're all raising their hand. They want it to be 80, but can you make it 80? Because if you can make it 80, I'll start praying to you. But until then, we're all powerless over the weather. We're powerless. If it could start raining, we can't do anything about it. We are powerless. Okay, so I learned that there is a power greater than me. It was a little bit of a shock and a little bit of a sadness for a moment that there's something more powerful than me, but amazingly enough, it's true. And then, I had to learn to turn my life over to that power. But, it's not that hard when you think about it, because you're turning your life over whether you admit it or not, whether you are on board or not. You still don't have the power. You just, by saying I'm turning my life over, there's two things in my view that means. One is that, I am powerless, there's a power greater than me, and I'm going to try and align myself with that power. And two, I am willing to take steps 4 through 12 of this program, because that's what God wants for me. God wants me to be recovered. God doesn't want me out there being afraid to walk into a supermarket. God wants me, wants me to be healthy and recovered so that I can contribute to the world, so I can be of service to the world. So I was able to take those steps. And then, you know, after that, I don't want to say it's clerical because it's also very emotional. But, you know, I had 175 resentments because the world was out to get me. And it got me a lot. And by the way, the world may have been out to get me. But, you know, I was holding the negative feelings of all those interactions, of every girl who turned me down, and there's legions, of every teacher who made fun of me in front of the class, of every adult who made fun of me in front of my friends, of every friend who made fun of me in front of my friends, or adults. Yeah, I mean, we can keep doing the math. I picked 170-something of them, and there were probably three or four times that, because that was part of my disease. I held on to those feelings. You know, my good friend Harlan, who does all those big book workshops, says the word resentment means re meaning to do again, and sentiment meaning feeling. Redo your feelings. Do I need to be redoing those feelings? There are other feelings I've had in my life I'd like to redo. Those are not them. You know, they are not. And so, I had to go through all of that, and I had to clear that wreckage. And I had to then make a list of people I had harmed, because I was not the greatest guy in the world. I'll be honest with you. I was, liar, cheater, thief. You know, I had a famous guy that I stole $400-something from while I was doing a show with him. He trusted me, and I stole money from him because I didn't have any right or wrong compass. I couldn't differentiate the true from the false because I was in my disease. And by the way, this was like 6 months before I came into program. This was not ancient history. When I'm out there, I'm not a great guy. I'm not. I pretend to be. I try and appear to be. And I still love my family and my friends, but, there's stuff that's not great. And so I had to call this guy up and say, I stole money from you. Now, talk about a humbling experience. That is a humbling experience. This is a famous human being who could make or break my career just because he felt like it. But what was more important? My career or my sobriety, my abstinence. It didn't seem like too much of a choice. So I called him, and he was very kind about it. Not very nice, but very kind. There's a difference. He wasn't going, oh, don't worry about it, pal. But he also said, I understand, and here's how you can... And I didn't have the money to pay him back, by the way. Did I mention that? And so he said, here's how you can make it up. And I'll tell you very briefly, or maybe not that briefly, it was $400, and I paid it off incrementally to a charity. And I happened to go into a store that took money for this charity, was sort of a vessel to take money for this charity. And I still owed $200, and it was about, 8 or 9 months later, and I had gotten a job and gotten flush financially. And I bought a $5 toy for my dog and then contributed $200 to this charity. And the woman behind the counter couldn't understand what the hell was going on. So she said, you spent $5, but you're giving $200? I said, just take the money. So she took the money. I got into my car. I turned on the car. The car was on the news radio station because I was listening for the traffic. And the news radio station says, flash alert, so-and-so just died, the guy that I had the money to.
No way.
Literally, moments after I paid the last part of this debt. God works sometimes not so mysterious ways. But I was able to hear that news and feel clean. And let me tell you something, there's a big difference between hearing that news and feeling clean and hearing that news and being dirty. You know, it's a big emotional difference, and I was able to be clean about it. So I went through the steps, and and then went through the steps again. First I did it through the AA 12 and 12, then I did it through the OA 12 and 12, and finally I did it through the Big Book. And this is over the course of 14 years, so don't think you all have to go home and crash every book right now. Your sponsor will guide you through. There was a point I was going to make, and I lost my train of thought because that's what happens when you're old. Boy, I really did just lose my whole train of thought. Where was I? I got through three times in the book. So then I realized, about 3.5 years into abstinence, I started to gain a little bit of weight. And not a lot of weight, not like rapid, but I started gaining weight. And I said, you know, what's going on? And I couldn't really kind of put my finger on it. My sponsor, you know, didn't, you know, he'd been absent so long. The food was, it was a hard discussion for us to have sometimes as to how to meter the food. And I heard a guy speak, and he was talking about sober eating. And he said, there's a difference between abstinence and eating soberly. Abstinence is what I don't eat. Right? And I got a great list. If you want to see a list, I mean, I have a big, long list of things I do not eat. But that's not sober eating. That's abstinence. That's what I don't eat. Because when I was eating, for me, mealtime was a time. Between 7 and 7:30, let's go. If it's not on that list, bring it on. And so this guy said, are you taking the edge off with food? He was speaking from the podium, but he said that, and it was like he was saying it to me. Because I was taking the edge off with food at least twice a day, lunch and dinner. I was taking the edge off with food, and I was eating too much food, and that's why I was gaining weight. It doesn't take a real genius to figure that out. And so I walked up to him, and I said, I need what you have. And so he gave me a few hoops to jump through, because you know, we only have so much time in the day, and if someone's not serious about what you're offering, then why would you bother to give them a lot of time? So I did what he asked, and I, you know, sort of became involved with a group. They're called now the Sober Eating Group. It's not really any sort of designation. It's just a group of like-minded men who have needed to lose 100 pounds or more, who get together and discuss the peculiarities of having to lose 100 pounds or more. There's certain tenets of eating that we apply, one of which is we make no unilateral food decisions. So I go over my food plan with my sponsor. I'm the lawyer, he's the judge. If he says, if I pitch, and I pitched for a living. I was, I'm a good pitcher. All right, I want, this is the food, this is how it's going to look. No. What do you mean, no? No. Okay. Actually, I don't say okay, I say F you. Okay. I don't abbreviate. I say the long version of that, and then I say okay. Because it's okay, because I've agreed that I'm going to let him have the last word. Because I cannot judge, I cannot trust myself. My intuition around food, if I ever had any positive intuition around food, it's been gone for decades. Decades. I don't know. I mean, I could tell other people, it's real easy. You know, someone says, oh, look at my meal. What should I eat if I want to lose weight? Well, I can tell you that. But, you know, I can't tell me that. I can tell you that. You know, but to me, you know, my disease says, oh, that, you know, I don't eat fried food. I don't eat a bunch of bread. Oh, that chicken parmesan on a roll looks great. I'll have that for lunch. Wait, I don't eat fried. I don't eat bread. How am I going to have that for lunch? Well, you know, it doesn't compute. That's why I need to talk about my food to somebody else. I just can't do it myself. And so I give unilateral food decision, and I eat 3 meals and 2 snacks, and the meals are weighed and measured, and I hate saying those words. And I eat a total of about 10 ounces of protein in a day, because that's what an outside nutritionist told me to do. Because as I get older, here's some good news for all of you. As you get older, you need to eat less food, according to this nutritionist. And so I have gone from eating at one point having 16 ounces of protein in a day to now having 10 ounces of protein in a day. But you know what happened? I lost 35 pounds from the time I gave up the extra protein to today. So, and it's not because I tried to lose any weight, but because that's what the nutritionist told me to do that. I took that back to my sponsor, because the nutritionist isn't one of us. So she can't tell me how to eat. She can tell me what the science is, but she can't tell me what to do, because she has no idea how I eat and how I process my food and food decisions. So I took the information she gave me and brought it back to my sponsor, and then arm wrestled for an hour with him, and we came to the to the plan. All right, so that is what I do now to recover. What it's like now, I'll just give you a couple of highlights. Before I came to program in 2009, by the way, it was July 5th, 2009. That's not a coincidental date. July 4th, I go to the same party every year, and have for the last 30 years, and I was going to tie one on the 4th before I went to the meeting on the 5th. And I did, by the way, and then somehow I was able to get abstinent on the 5th. I've been back to that party now 14 times, haven't had sugar or fried food or bread, haven't had any of my abstinent foods, amazingly enough. But so anyway, July 5th, 2009. And now I lost my train of thought again because I'm just getting too old to do this. I have to write notes down. Anyway.
What it's like now.
Oh, thank you. Oh, so before I came in on July 5th, 2009, thank you, I had been to the emergency room 8 times in the 3 years preceding for, and we'll just call it for being fat. I thought I was having a heart attack, I had vertigo, I couldn't stand, I was flopping around like a fish. I mean, all crappy bullshit, reasons to go to, but I would go to the emergency room. Since I've been in program, I have not been to the emergency room once. Before I came in, my doctor said my triglycerides were so high, my blood was like syrup. My triglycerides are exactly in the middle of the proper spectrum right now, as are almost all my other blood tests. The only thing I'm high on is albumin, and I'm still trying to figure out what the hell that is. So, my doctor said to me, what it's like now, my doctor said to me about a year ago, your weight is no longer negatively influencing your health. And I said, excuse me? And he said, you didn't hear me? I said, oh, I heard you. I want to hear you say it again. Because no doctor has ever, ever, ever said that to me. In my life, no doctor has said that to me. Now, he doesn't have to say it anymore. I see the guy doesn't say it. I'm pissed. But, I'm healthier now than I was 20 years ago. It's amazing to actually say that and believe it, but I'm healthier now than I was 20 years ago. I played 4 hours of pickleball today, and I'm standing here now. Not obviously very compos mentis, but I'm still standing here. And here's the other thing that life is like now. I shouldn't say I don't fight anything or anyone, because that's probably bullshit. But I don't fight many things or many people at all. I mean, I really don't. I've always been politically active, and it doesn't matter which side you're on, because if you are politically active, these days, it's very there's a lot of fighting, a lot of anger, a lot of emotion, and I can't afford it. So I've sort of stopped. I have a subscription to one of the national newspapers, and I think I've read it 4 times so far this year, because I just can't do it. I just can't be in that fight anymore. As I keep saying, I'm old. I just turned 65, in my business, 65-year-olds are not looked upon as big contributors. We are seen as, get rid of these people. They're too old. And I've been experiencing that. I've had some other jobs, and I don't like those other jobs. I'm finding myself both simultaneously overqualified and underqualified for the same jobs. And so it's really frustrating, and I don't have structure. I'm doing some entrepreneurial things. I'm not broke. I'm not worried about money. But, I have no structure, and I have no focus on a daily basis. And I kind of, so like Friday, I just meandered. I got nothing accomplished. And I've got a list of things that I need to get accomplished, or I want to get accomplished. And that is causing me stress, I guess, is the only way to put it. Who moved my cheese kind of stress. And in the, and it's been going on pretty much since the first of the year. And in the last 2.5-3 months, I have felt the cravings again. Mm-hmm. I haven't felt cravings in years. They were almost foreign to me when they came back. And that's why I said before, I feel almost, that it's dangerous to walk into a store on occasion, because I'm frustrated, and I'm not angry, because the anger doesn't do me any good. And I know it's God's will, and I know it's what's supposed to happen. I know that there'll be something somewhere, and give it time. And I know all of these things, because they've all come true in my life prior to today. But right now, this issue is a big churning problem for me. And I do everything that I'm told. I write on it. I talk about it. I share about it. I talk to my sponsor about it. I do everything I'm supposed to do, and most of the time, I'm okay. But every once in a while, I feel like, I'm going to get swept up into that swirling vortex of the food, because it's calling, and it hasn't done that in a long time. I'm honest about it. I talk about it. And I don't eat it. And if I have to call 97 people to not eat it, I'm going to call 97 people. If I have to go outside and take a walk, I'm going to go outside and take a walk. These are things I haven't done in years, in the program. I don't care. I'll go right back to what I had to do day one. And let me tell you something. I'm on my knees and I'm talking to God every day. And I still get these feelings sometimes, because my disease wants to come back and take me over. That's what my disease wants. And my higher power doesn't want that to happen. And it's like the devil and the angel on the shoulder. And it would be so much easier if they talked that way, right? Because in every movie, the angel says, "Oh, hello." And the devil says, "What do you want?" And so if they could talk in two different voices, "Don't eat that. Eat it, eat it." I would know which one was which. "Oh, no one will know if you have that Bay City's bread." Well, that's what I'm hearing, but I don't know which voice is telling me. If I knew it was that voice, I'd go, "No, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to listen to you." But it doesn't tell me that. It's my voice I hear it in. It's my voice. And when it's my voice I hear it in, I don't know what to believe. So I need you to tell me what is true and what is false. I need you to tell me what is healthy and what is not, what is abstinent and what is not, what is sober and what is not. I can't do it by myself. And I can't trust anybody who hasn't been in these rooms to tell me. If you've been in these rooms for an hour, I trust you more than someone I know for 50 years who's never been in this room. For an hour, I trust you more, because you understand what we are and who we are and what we deal with and what we go through. And so, if I didn't have you, I would be out there, I would be eating at 65 and well over 300, I'd probably be dead. I'm glad I'm not dead, I'm glad I'm here with you guys, I'm glad I've listened to you and allowed you to teach me how not to compulsively eat one day at a time. So thank you for letting me share. Sadly, you have to deal with me for 7 more minutes for questions. So, unless no one has a question, in which case I'll gladly sit down. Yes, Lucy.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your share. How do you practice your spiritual program, and how do you keep it alive and connected on a daily basis?
So how do I practice my spiritual program, and how do I keep it alive and connected on a daily basis? I have a ritual that I do in the morning. I have a ritual that I do at night, and I also do a 10, well, I guess it's really an 11-step, technically speaking, but I do a review that I write that has been lifted from the Big Book, and I answer those questions and send them to my sponsor on a daily basis. I also so my morning ritual is 4 prayers, on my knees, 4 prayers, and then my evening ritual is a mental review, 2 prayers, and then in the morning when I get up, I do the written review of the day before. And that's every day. And then I probably talk to God on a good day a couple dozen times. And when I say talk to God, God doesn't respond just for the record. You know, I don't get back, you know, I'm not a tea leaf reader God kind of guy, you know. I ask God to help me stay calm. I ask God to help me understand what's going on, to show me the right path, what's the next indicated action, things of that nature. And also, God, let me not engage with this person, this food, this issue. You know, it's a shorthand for saying, you know, it's almost like I sometimes could say Jeff's better self. Don't do that. But I don't do that because Jeff's better self ain't so better. God's better self is much better than Jeff's better self. So that's where I go to. Okay.
Nope. Thank you so much, Jeff. Can you talk about what helped you in program to gain more self-confidence and self-esteem?
What helped me gain self-confidence and self-esteem? Sadly, I didn't need much help with that. I was a piece of crap that the world revolved around. You know what I mean? I also, you know, in my profession, I was involved in the entertainment business for many years, and I was public-facing in the entertainment business, and so I had a character that I would fall into that was full of self-esteem and energy and stuff, and I could just put, you know, sort of slip into that guy. I call it Contestant Jeff because I did a lot of game shows, and so when I'm with contestants, like, "Hey, everybody, how you doing?" That's not really who I am, but it's easy for me to slip into that. As many of you have probably seen over the years, if you were at the birthday party, you heard me constantly bleeding for you to buy raffle tickets for the prize drawing. You know, I don't have a problem getting into that mode, but that's not really who I am. So I didn't really, I'm sorry, but I don't have much experience with that. Yes, ma'am.
Since I'm new, I'd like to hear about your first 30 days. So how did you go from having the compulsion to overeat, I guess, to some sense of abstinence?
Got it. We have a newcomer who asked to talk about the first 30 days, and how did I go from can't possibly stop eating this food to being abstinent, and, you know, how did that manifest itself? And the answer is I relied on the kindness of everybody around me. I couldn't have done it myself. I couldn't have made the decisions myself. I couldn't have. In the first 3 or 4 days, I probably made 50 calls total to people, and I didn't know anybody. By the way, I'm new. I'm getting numbers off the sheet and calling people like, "Who the hell are you? I don't care if you don't know who I am. If I don't talk to somebody, I'm going to eat." And I was also fortunate. I had been in briefly, as I mentioned, you know, many years before, and there were a few people, there's probably 3 or 4 people in this room who I knew from back then. And then, you know, so they introduced me to their new people, and so I kind of had a little bit. So my suggestion, if I may make a suggestion, and it's an opinion, so do with it what you want. Get a posse. And everybody in this room, by the way, is your start. Because there's not a person in this room who wouldn't stop what they were doing to help you. And you know why? Not because we love you, we do, but not because we love you, but because it helps us. When I tell you what it's like and what happened, what I remember. When I make a suggestion to you about what you might be able to do to stay abstinent for the next 10 minutes, it tells me, I have to remember that, and then I have to do it. Because otherwise I'm a complete hypocritical you-know-what. Right? And I don't want to be that. I want to be a better person. And that's the amazing thing. We come for this, we come to lose weight, but we leave better people. You know, I wish the world was like that. The rest of the world was like that. We leave here better people than when we walked in. Because we understand that it's not just about us. That selfishness isn't what we're here for. We're here for service. We're here to be the best people we can be to our friends, our family, our, you know, the community at large, the world. You know, I'm not the greatest eco guy. I still use plastic bottles, but and things of that nature. But I still try to leave the world. You know, it still is in my head. What does it have to do with food? Everything. If you feel better about yourself, it's the more they call it in the book, they call it moral psychology. If I feel better about myself and my world, I feel less compelled to cover that up with food. And so just and take every number. I didn't see the We Care list being passed around. I hate to not point your finger, but if we can get one, we should do it so that we can make. I'm sorry, what was your name again? So that we can get Falouf's numbers, so that she has numbers of everybody in this room who she can rely on, because that's how I got through the first 30 days. And I wish you all the luck in the world, and please do not feel you're imposing if you ask for help. We want to help you. We want to help you. And with that, I get to sit down. Thank you guys very much.